Well, hello there, ladies and gentlemen. The MSS crew is back on the attack and doing what we do best here in the Fred Bertelsen Memorial Old Time Radio Room of RadioOutOfThePast.org. The day's date is Saturday, April 23rd, 2016, and this is your MSS host, back in the saddle and assisting with bringing to you another exciting and ultra-exhilarating internet broadcast of Michael's Saturday Night Surprise. Well, folks, as promised before, we are back, and I've got to make this intro and exit very, very cool and very, very special, because I am back in my original home studio of Reading, Pennsylvania, for my bachelor party weekend. Yes, there will be trouble and mischief all around. But anyway, let's get things rolling by allowing me to introduce the presenter for tonight's program. He just so happens to be that real-life Texas six-gun, Daniel Vigil. Yep, he's put something together for you tonight that I think you will all enjoy. So why don't we sit back, relax? I hope each and every one of you grabs your favorite drinks and snacks, because Daniel, the microphone is yours.
Good evening, listening audience. Welcome to 2016, and this last in April edition of Michael's Saturday Surprise. A few events come to mind when I think about the month of April. Things like Easter, which usually occurs within the month, the end of the United States income tax season, and strangely enough, the sinking of RMS Titanic, which went down after colliding with an iceberg on the morning of April 14th, 1912. If you were fortunate enough to be listening to American radio on that date, years and years later, you might have heard this episode of Gunsmoke, entitled The Executioner, broadcast on April 14th, 1956.
Gunsmoke, brought to you by Chesterfield. Chesterfield packs more pleasure, because it's more perfectly packed, thanks to Accuray. They satisfy the most. Around Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad. The transcribed story of the violence that moved west with young America. And the story of a man who moved with it.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal. The first man they look for and the last they want to meet. It's a chancy job, and it makes a man watchful and a little lonely.
This fellow riding in, Morgan?
He's a stranger for sure, Abe.
That brand on his horse, I can't even read it.
Good horse, though.
Yeah.
Get down, stranger.
Who are you, men?
Well, we're the Curry brothers. We own this ranch.
How far is it to Dodge?
60 miles, if you ride in a straight line.
I want some grain for my horse. Where is it?
Look, stranger, we got no grain. We're fresh out.
Now, Abe, if he wants a little grain...
And then he can act more polite about it.
Oh, ain't I been polite enough for you? Maybe I ought to change my ways just for you.
What are you, anyway? Some kid who thinks he's a man just because he's wearing a gun for the first time?
Mister, I've been wearing a gun 8 years, ever since I was 16.
That makes you 24 and still a kid that ought to be taken out to the shed.
You aim to take me out, mister?
Somebody ought to.
A lot of men have tried. I guess it's your turn now. Go ahead, you're wearing a gun.
Oh, now, we won't have any fighting. You watch your temper, Abe. The kid don't mean nothing.
The name's Tom Clegg. I ain't a kid.
All right, Clegg. Forget it. You too, Abe.
Well...
Say you're sorry, mister.
Say what?
You heard me.
Are you crazy?
Maybe this will help you. I'll draw.
No, Abe.
Abe, don't move, mister.
You killed him. You killed my brother. Well, he hardly got his hand on his gun.
Why don't you try me?
Abe wasn't no gunfighter. Neither am I.
Then I tell you what. You practice a little. I'll be in Dodge for a spell. Come see me.
Oh, now, say, there is a good-looking horse, Mr. Jones.
Oh, which one, Chester?
That big bay that young fellow's just getting off of there.
Oh?
Well, ain't he?
Well, I wasn't looking at the horse, Chester.
Oh, you know that fella?
Yeah, maybe.
What are you people staring at?
Aren't you Tom Clegg?
What? Matt Dillon.
At Las Cruces about 8 years ago, wasn't it?
Exactly 8 years ago. I've changed some since then, Marshal Dillon.
Yeah, I'm a marshal. This Chester Proudfoot, Clegg.
How do you do?
Hello. Please. Well, Marshal, I suppose you're remembering how I didn't dare draw on that fellow in Las Cruces.
You were smart not to. He'd have killed you, sure.
I left there. I went out by myself. I practiced for 2 years, every day. I got pretty good with a gun, Marshal.
Did you?
That fellow's dead now. I went back and I killed him.
There wasn't much of a quarrel, Clegg.
I don't need much, Marshal. Oh, I've killed a lot of men since then. But don't you worry about me. They always draw first.
You're telling me you've turned gunman, huh?
I've got me a pretty fair reputation in New Mexico.
And now you want to be known in Kansas. That's why you came here.
I didn't say that.
I know you're kind, Clegg. I ought to. I've killed enough of them.
Not me, Marshal. You ain't going to kill me. I'm too fast for you and I'm too smart. I'll show you someday.
That whistling man, Bobby Haggart, really started something. Tonight, the Calypso Boys join in. Ready, amigos?
Packs more pleasure. Packs more pleasure. Chesterfield packs more pleasure. Because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
It stands to reason a cigarette made better and packed better smokes better, tastes better. And Chesterfield is more perfectly packed by Accuray. This electronic miracle removes human error in cigarette manufacture. So Accuray Chesterfield is firm and pleasing to the lips, mild yet deeply satisfying. Yes, Chesterfield gives you something no other cigarette can give you.
Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
To the touch, to the taste. Chesterfield packs more pleasure because it's more perfectly packed. By Chesterfield, mild, yet they satisfy the most.
Oh, Chester.
Chester, I'm coming, Mr. Dillon. What was it you wanted?
You all through out there?
Well, I'm through to one of us tries to open that back door again. I guess it won't never get fixed proper unless we just build us a new one. Oh, Morgan Curry.
All right, come on in, Morgan.
Oh, Chester.
Where's Abe at?
It's about Abe. I come to see the marshal.
Is something wrong, Morgan?
Marshal, you've known me and Abe a long time.
I sure have.
Would you say I'm a man who tells lies?
You know the answer to that, Morgan.
And I'll say it short. A fella rode up to the ranch day before yesterday, and him and Abe got into a little argument, but Abe was about willing to call it off when this fella slapped him.
And Abe went for his gun, huh?
He never had a chance, Marshal. This fella was the fastest man I ever seen.
Did you say his name, Morgan?
Tom Clegg.
Yeah, I thought so.
He's a killer, Marshal. He made Abe draw.
That's what he means about being smart.
No man can take being slapped. That ain't self-defense, Marshal, and he can't claim it is.
The law says he can, Morgan.
Look, Marshal, I ain't a coward. You know that, but there's no use my facing him. He'd kill me easy as he did Abe. Now, what good would that do?
I wish I could help you, Morgan.
Well, it ain't just me, Marshal. It's all the men he's going to kill before he's through. Somebody's got to stop him.
Somebody will. Someday.
Now, before he kills any more men. It's like poisoning a wolf. Don't you see that?
Morgan, I'm a lawman. When Tom Clegg breaks the law, I'll go after him. But until he does, there's nothing I can do.
I don't know if you're fast enough for him, Marshal. But you're the only man I do know who might be.
I'm not hired to gun men down, Morgan.
He's got to be killed.
And I'll admit the world would be better off without him.
You said something about his being smart.
Now, he claimed that.
And we'll see how smart he is. Marshal, Tom Clegg's going to die, no matter what. He's going to die.
You want another beer, Matt?
No, one's my limit, Kitty.
One? Oh, you're expecting trouble.
I didn't say that.
One beer said it.
You know me too well, Kitty. But you're right about my expecting trouble.
Well, I already knew about that. I've watched Morgan Curry following Clegg in and out of here for 2 days now.
I don't know what Morgan has in mind, Kitty, but I'm sure he doesn't plan to shoot Clegg in the back or anything like that.
Well, he isn't even carrying a gun.
Yeah, I know.
He just stands around at a distance and sort of keeps an eye on Clegg. It's driving him crazy.
But Morgan's not carrying a gun. It's made Clegg helpless to do anything about it.
Maybe he's trying to get him into a fist fight, Matt.
Ah, Clegg wouldn't fight him, Kitty. He knows he'd get torn apart.
Beats me what he's up to.
Well, I wish Morgan would go home and forget about it.
Maybe it's you he's trying to shame, Matt.
Me? What for?
For not doing anything about Clegg murdering his brother.
It wasn't murder, Kitty. Abe drew first.
The way I heard it, Clegg made him draw. And I don't care what the law calls self-defense.
Well, I have to, Kitty. I have to care.
Yeah, I know, Matt. Well, there they are.
What?
Clegg. He just went to the bar. Morgan will be along directly.
Yeah. Well, you keep an eye on him, Kitty.
Me keep an eye on him?
I got to ride out into the country tomorrow. I'm leaving before dawn so as I can get back early in the afternoon.
Well, then you better get to bed. Good night, Matt.
I'll see you tomorrow, Kitty.
Sure.
Marshal! I want to talk to you.
I'll go ahead, Clegg. Talk.
It's about him.
Huh? Oh, Morgan. Hey, Morgan.
What are you calling him for?
You want me, Marshal?
Yeah. Clegg here wanted to talk to me about you, Morgan. I thought maybe you ought to hear it, too.
Sure, he can hear it. I want him to stop following me around, that's all.
Oh, why tell me that, Clegg?
Because you've got to stop him.
Me stop him? He isn't breaking any law.
He ain't wearing a gun. A dirty coward.
There's no law that a man has to wear a gun.
It's making me jumpy. I don't like being stared at all the time.
You got a guilty conscience about something, Clay?
You shut up.
Why don't you take your gun off and shut me up, Clay?
You hear him, Marshal? You see what a coward he is?
I can't help you, Clay.
Lock him up, Marshal. Go on, lock him up. You heard me.
Yeah, I heard you.
Then do it.
Not very likely.
All right. You're wearing a gun. Are you a coward too, Marshal?
Morgan, come outside. I want to talk to you.
Okay, Marshal.
You're both cowards. That's what you are, cowards.
Why didn't you kill him in there, Marshal? That was your chance.
I'm not a gunman, Morgan. I'm a lawman. Won't you ever understand that?
Maybe I'm beginning to.
Look, Morgan, it's no use. I'm not going to fight Clegg. Now, you can't use the law for your own revenge. That's not what it's for. Now, why don't you forget this and go back home?
Marshal, do you think I'm a coward because I won't put on a gun and let him kill me?
I don't know what to think, Morgan. You seem to be doing all the thinking these days.
My brother Abe was murdered, Marshal. He was murdered.
I'm sorry, Morgan, but there's nothing I can do. Now, good night.
Are you listening to Gunsmoke? In your favorite easy chair? Or out driving? Oh, there you are. In the kitchen. Say, you want to make whatever you're doing more enjoyable? Have a Chesterfield. Enjoy Chesterfield's better taste and mildness. You see, Chesterfield packs more pleasure because it's more perfectly packed. A more perfectly packed cigarette gives you an open, easy draw that unlocks all the better taste and mildness of fine tobaccos. And Chesterfield, made by exclusive Accuray, is more perfectly packed, with an even distribution of tobacco from one end of your Chesterfield to the other. Firm and pleasing to the lips, mild, yet deeply satisfying. Remember, to the touch, to the taste,
Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
Buy Chesterfield. Mild, yet they satisfy the most.
Everybody, Chester.
Why's the town so quiet this afternoon?
Everybody seen you riding in, I guess.
Huh?
They've been waiting for you to get back.
Waiting for me? Why?
I told them you'd be back early afternoon. There's trouble here this morning, Mr. Dillon.
You mean a shooting?
Yes, sir.
Morgan?
Yes, sir, it was Morgan.
Yeah, so he put on a gun after all, huh?
No, sir, he was unarmed.
What?
He ain't dead, though. At least not yet. He's up at dock.
Where's Clegg?
Clegg must have saw you ride in, too. He's standing across the street now, behind you there.
Ah. Well, I won't keep him waiting. I hear you shot another man, Clegg.
He deserved it.
Did he?
I warned him about following me around. It drove me half crazy.
So you stopped him?
He slapped me. No man can take that.
No. Not even his brother Abe could.
Say, I plumb forgot about that.
You told me once how smart you are, Clegg. I guess you forgot about that, too.
What do you mean?
Morgan was unarmed.
You gonna try to put me in jail, Marshal?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try.
Now you're forgetting. I also told you I'm too fast for you.
Maybe you are. I'm arresting you, Clegg.
Keep your eyes on mine, Marshal. I want to see the look in them when it hits you. That's the best part. Now?
The shots, Matt. I see Clegg still lying there.
Not if he's got any friends that can move him.
I doubt if he has. A man like that.
I guess not, Doc.
You did it the only way possible.
I was trying to arrest him, Doc. I didn't walk out there to shoot him down. How's Morgan?
With two bullets in him, he's doing as well as might be expected.
Oh, meaning what?
He's dying, Matt.
Yeah. Now, let's go see him.
Matter of fact, there's no reason at all he should have lived this long. I can't understand it. Most men would have died on the spot, shot up the way he was.
Morgan?
Marshal? I heard some shooting. Didn't I?
Yeah. Yeah, you did.
Was you in it?
I was.
And Clegg's dead, huh?
That's how you wanted it, wasn't it?
That's how I wanted it. That's what I've been hanging on for.
Morgan, you knew he'd shoot you when you slapped him, didn't you?
I had him on edge, Marshal. Planned it that way.
Yeah, I thought so. And you were willing to die just to get me to face him, huh?
There wasn't no other way. I couldn't kill him myself.
Well, I can't say I admire your thinking, but you're sure not a coward.
He murdered my brother. He murdered me the same way. But we got him anyway. Didn't we? Didn't we, Mother?
Well, he was right. He won. Even if he had to die to do it.
Yeah. But you know something, Doc? I feel like a hangman. You made an executioner out of me. And I don't like it.
I understand that, Matt. But you'll forget it. You'll forget it. In time.
Yeah, sure. One more thing to forget.
Star, William Conrad.
Chesterfield packs more pleasure because Chesterfield's more perfectly packed.
A cigarette made better and packed better smokes better, tastes better. And Chesterfield is more perfectly packed by Accuray. This electronic miracle removes human error in cigarette manufacture. So Accuray Chesterfield is firm and pleasing to the lips. Chesterfield. Mild, yet they satisfy the most. On the frontier, bands of marauding Indians weren't too uncommon. And next week, during an attack, three people are killed. But not by the Indians. And that was the West. Good night. Gunsmoke, produced and directed by Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Our story was specially written for Gunsmoke by John Meston, with music composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Sound patterned by Ray Kemper and Bill James. Featured in the cast were Sam Edwards, Vic Perrin, and John Daner. Harley Bear is Chester, Howard McNear is Doc, and Georgia Ellis is Kitty. Take a tip from the L&M people, the people who have put the pleasure back into cigarette smoking. Take the L&M Miracle Tip, the tip that lets all the flavor of superior tobaccos come rich, come clean, come easy. Once you light up an L&M, you'll understand why we say they're so good to your taste, so quick on the draw. It's the pure white Miracle Tip that adds so much to your enjoyment. So make today your big red letter day. Change to L&M. Join us again next week for another specially transcribed story on Gunsmoke.
That was The Executioner, an episode of Gunsmoke, broadcast on April 14th, 1956. Now let's turn the OTR calendar back to April 14th of 1954, and this episode of Escape, entitled Affair at Mandrake.
Tired of the everyday grind? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all? We offer you Escape.
Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
You are standing in the bedroom of an English inn, the sound of revelry coming faintly up the stairs, while in the shadows across the room from you, the gun in his hand already aimed at you, is an enemy agent whose success depends upon your death.
Listen now as Escape brings you Ben Wright's story, Affair at Mandrake.
This town, this beach, might have been wonderful in peacetime, I don't know. I never saw it before, but in war in 1940 it was hell. And on the map that I held in my shaking hands, it read Dunkirk. I stood by a burnt-out truck, weaving with fatigue, watching what was left of my battalion lurch like sleepwalkers onto the shell-swept dunes, to await their turn on the little ships that were struggling so desperately to get them away and back to England.
Major Baker!
Over here, son, Major. Behind the colonel.
Afraid he's boarded, sir.
Him and the old battalion order group.
All of them?
Yes, sir. One bloody shell. Nasty, very nasty. You want to look over the prisoners now, sir?
I suppose so. Brigade still wants unit identification.
This way, sir.
Right.
I left them with the Lance Corporal of D Company. Here you are, sir. This bomb all here.
Right.
Okay, you Nordic Superman, up on your bloody feet.
Now get them lined up, all right. We'll see what we've got.
Prisoners! Come!
That man at the end, Holloway. Get him turned around.
You, face the officer. You I'm talking to. Turn around.
That's more like it. Now we can... 30. 30 shots.
Bitte, Herr Major.
30 shots. What in the world?
Aber, Herr Major, ich kann kein Englisch Wort verstehen.
You don't understand English when you were born in England.
Bitte, Herr Major.
Holloway, shoot that man.
Sir?
Shoot him.
No, sir.
Then by heaven, I will.
No, sir, you can't.
Believe
sir,
me.
Stop it. You know it's against King's regulations to shoot a prisoner. You know it is, Major, sir.
He's a traitor. I'll prove it to you. Get his service book.
Yes, sir.
It says 30 shots. Born London, England, doesn't it?
No, sir. It says here Wilfred Dorf, born Bremen, sir.
Dorf? I could have sworn that... Dorf? Wilfred Dorf?
Yes, sir.
All right, Holloway. Must have been mistaken. Give him back his book. Now, I want the prisoners placed nearer the sea. Less chance of them making a bolt for it that way. Then I want... I wanted to see that all of the ranks are fully equipped. What they don't have already, they can pick up off the beach.
Right, sir. Yes, sir. Corporal, get them prisoners down nearer to the sea.
All right, John Major.
Come along, Holloway.
Excuse me, Major, but who did you think that prisoner was just now?
My best friend, Holloway.
Best friend, sir? German?
Yes, blasted Holloway, my best friend.
Sorry, sir.
That's all right, Holloway. I'm tired. We all are. I made a mistake, that's all. I wasn't really going to shoot him, you know?
No, sir.
Major Baker, sir. Navy's just signal for us to embark.
All right. Acknowledge.
Yes, sir.
Battalion will move off by companies. A Company leading. Single file, 5-yard interval. Deliver that order to platoon leaders.
Yes, sir.
You married, Holloway?
Not off, sir. 10 years now and 3 nippers.
They'd be glad to see you.
I should say so. You know, I've always thought of the old trouble and strife talking too much, but after this little lark, she'll seem like a blinking deaf... Come on, sir, let's get off this flaming beach.
We left Dunkirk blazing behind us and the Navy took over. Then England again, and finally the blessed release of 2 weeks' leave. But it was a short-lived happiness, for on the 6th day I was ordered to report to the War Office. General Ballister, sir.
Baker, yes, of course, I sent for you, didn't I? Baker, congratulations.
I beg your pardon, sir?
On your military cross. I haven't got it yet, eh? Well, it'll be long. It was a good show in France, Baker. A fine rear guard and a properly equipped battalion when you came ashore. Deserve your MC.
Thank you, sir.
Thank me, rubbish. Deserve it. Now, what do you know about rockets, Baker?
Well, sir, I was interested in them pre-war as a possible method for postal delivery.
Oh, that's right. I have it here in your record. Attended experimental meetings in Germany, eh?
Yes, sir. My best friend and I... Well, it interested me.
Yes. Well, come here. Have a look at this map.
Sir?
Mandrake Forest. Full of rockets. Our rockets. AK-AK and anti-personnel. Well, the Germans think they're very clever with this sort of nonsense. We think we're a bit brighter.
Mandrake Forest. I see.
Baker, I want you to command a group at Mandrake and carry out field tests. Can't give you more than a battalion for the job either. I'm giving you the job because of your record and because you know about rockets. Now, what's your main problem?
Security?
Exactly, security. The enemy knows we're up to something, and he'll do his best to find out what it is.
It'll be quite a job, sir, with only a battalion.
All you get with your colonelcy, of course. Take it?
Of course, sir. Thank you. Oh, one thing, sir. May I have my old regimental sergeant major with me? Holloway knows the way I work, and he'd be very good value.
Oh, we'll arrange that immediately. Is that all?
I think so, sir.
Good, that's it, then. Except for a word of warning.
Sir?
From now on, Mandrake will be a number one target for enemy agents. Mandrake and you.
Yes, sir.
Your life, and more important still, our chances of winning this war depend on how well you do at Mandrake.
I'd already thought of that, sir.
I'm sure you had. Well, then, I suggest you spend the last of your leave by having a look around that district. Make your appreciation and so on, eh? Oh, yes, and dine with Barbara and me tonight, eh, Guy?
I'd love to, sir. Ah,
splendid. 8:30, then, blitz permitting. Oh, and do me a favor, will you?
Of course, sir.
Don't mention rockets, eh? Barbara's all right, really, but Pongo's awfully touchy.
Pongo?
Yes, the bloody dog, right?
Right, sir. And thank you. The dinner was excellent, as was the courvoisier. So it was well after midnight before I said goodnight to the Ballasters and made my way slowly towards my flat in Cranmer Mews. The darkness was absolute. No searchlights. No raid. An almost irritating hush. And then as I turned into the mews, I saw it. A chink of light coming from my own window. I moved quietly, yet as quickly as possible, up the steps. Then stopped suddenly. My door had been forced. I eased it open wider and stepped through. There was a ribbon of light from the study. Then, as I slowly edged closer... I came to where I had fallen in the hall. Head pounding, I got to my feet and opened the study door. The room was in chaos. Chairs ripped open and papers littering the carpet. Bookshelves empty. Pictures pushed aside. Quickly, I pried open the tightly fitted false bottom to the bureau drawer. My most secret documents and books were untouched. The film of chalk dust with which I had sprayed them, unmarked. If it had been a burglar, he'd got what he came for. If it had been the enemy... and they'd not discovered what my mission was. Hello.
Guy, sorry to disturb you. Ballister here.
Oh, yes, General.
Got another blister for you, I'm afraid.
In what way, sir?
Just after you left, I got a toll call from Pig Spooner. Chaps commanding a prisoner of war camp just outside your new area.
Yes, sir?
Yes. Thought I ought to tell you. Pig was livid. Said that 2 days ago, 6 of his POWs made a bolt for it. His patrols have brought in 5 of them, but one is still swanning about scot-free. Bloody well vanished.
Got a description of him, sir?
That's why I rang up. Blighter's about 32, medium build, but tall, pale face, black eyes and hair.
I'll keep my eyes open, sir. Anything else?
Yes. Pig thinks he must speak fluent English and know the country well. Oh, yes. The fellow's name is Wilfred Dorf.
I left London the next night, and as the train crawled towards Mandrake, under the nightly blanket of shellfire and bombers, I thought of my new command, of the rockets. and how they could change the whole face of the war, properly used and in the right hands. And I thought, too, of Wilfred Dorf, whom we'd captured at Dunkirk, the man I'd mistaken for my oldest friend, Ferdy Schatz. Ferdy's parents had been German, certainly, but he was a British citizen until he had gone to Berlin in 37 to finish his studies there. And if Dorf was Ferdy, why had he refused to recognize me that day? Shame? Fear? Why? Why change his name? In any case, I'd soon find out. For somewhere in the forest of Mandrake, he was loose. And then, much later, I was stepping off the train into a driving, stinging rain at Mandrake Halt, where Sergeant Holloway met me with a staff car. And in a matter of minutes, we were driving away from the station toward the little town of Mandrake.
The adjutant sends his apologies for not being here, sir, but the camp's a mess and he couldn't get away.
Thanks, Holloway. Well, they posted you quickly enough.
Too true, sir. Hardly had time to get my pack off.
Camp's a mess, sir.
Yes, sir. The adjutant suggests the Red Lion pub in the village for you, sir, till we get settled a bit. He's warned him, sir.
Cheer up, Holloway. It's not as bad as all that.
No, sir.
Well, at least we're home.
Yes, sir. But if you'll forgive me saying so, it ain't much better than the beach at Dunkirk.
How is your wife, Holloway?
Talky, sir. Very talky. Well, this is it, sir. The Red Bloody Lion. The camp's number is Mandrake 45 if you want the staff car for reconnaissance.
Fine. Thanks for meeting me, Holloway. How about a drink before you go back?
Well, it's very good of you, sir, but the sergeant's mess managed to get a couple of barrels of Scotch ale last night. They only have bitter here.
Righto. Off you go.
Good night, Colonel.
Good night.
Colonel Becker, isn't it?
That's right.
I'm Alfie Bingle. I've been expecting you, sir. Your adjutant gave us a buzz, and we've the best room put by for you. Number 6 on second floor. Has to eat out yet, sir?
Well, I did have dinner in London, but...
But they're still a bit peckish and all, eh?
Yes. Yes, as a matter of fact, I am.
Well, don't you worry, sir. I told the old lady to put by half a blood pudding and some green gauges for afters, just in case.
That sounds fine.
I'll take your valise up for you, sir, and the bottle of Jameson's Irish the adjutant sent along. You just stop into the bar parlor. It's Mrs. Ulservian there.
Right. Thank you.
Colonel, sir. I do hope you won't put us out of bounds to your chaps just because you're top secret and all.
Where did you hear that?
Well, it's sort of gossip, is all. Sort of gossip-like.
Let's talk about it some other time, shall we? In the meantime, how about the food?
Of course, sir. Right away. Right away.
The bar parlor was warm and crowded. Bingle's food far better than I'd hoped for. After I'd eaten, I sat for a while over a couple of glasses of port. I was tired after the journey north. Bingle's remark about being top secret irritated me, so that when the singing began, I started up to my room.
Hello, Guy.
Ferdy Schatz.
Sorry about this artillery, but we have to talk, and I remembered your little outburst at Dunkirk. It seemed wiser to take no chances.
And you were?
Wilfred Dorf, yes. That's right, the sort of melodramatic thing one is forced to do only in wartime, thank heavens.
Now you listen to me.
Guy, please, don't get yourself in an uproar. Pour a couple of drinks like a good chap, will you, and then we'll talk. Yet you probably have a service revolver in your valise, but I'd rather you didn't try to get it. The drinks over? There you are.
Thanks.
That's more like it, eh? Yes. And I can't tell you how grateful I was when you didn't positively identify me at Dunkirk, Guy.
I'll bet you were.
Well, you see, it was essential that I get to England with Germans and as a German.
What else are you? Captured you myself, didn't I? You, a British subject in a German uniform? Now that you've escaped, you've come to me to beg a favor. How long do you think you can trade on old friendship? You're an escaped prisoner of war.
Guy, let me explain.
Go on, then, explain. You have the gun.
All right. Firstly, we are very well aware of the importance of your new command.
We. The Germans?
Germans, my foot. British military intelligence.
British military? You? With MI5?
That's right. Guy, do you remember my farewell party at the Dorchester in 37 when I was leaving for Germany to finish my education?
I remember. What about it?
Intelligence knew war was coming then, sooner or later. And because of my German parentage, they sent me there as a plant.
What?
Guy, I'm not an escaped prisoner. That was arranged by courtesy of military intelligence. I expect the commandant of the camp is furious, but then sometimes you can't let the left hand know what
the... Suppose I did believe you. What are you doing here?
Well, we feel sure that one of the top German agents is now or will be in this area. Target, Mandrake's new rocket command, and, of course, its commander, you.
Who is this agent?
We don't know. Yet.
I see. Do you know what he looks like?
We don't know that either.
You know very little for someone that supposedly works for military intelligence.
Oh, I see. All right, here. Here. This is the only identification I carry. Look.
Doesn't mean a thing.
Guy, you don't think...
I don't think, Ferdy, I know. Those credentials are forged.
Forged? Are you out of your mind?
How credulous do you think I am, Ferdy?
Now listen, Guy, I need your help.
Our friendship's finished. Done. You see, you're on one side. I'm on the other. And you better go while you still have that gun, because the next time I find you, I'll kill you.
Guy? You always were pig-headed. All right, then, a drink for the road, hmm? One for our friendship that was.
As I poured his drink, he came toward me smiling, his gun in one hand. Then as he reached for it, I flung the raw whiskey straight into his eyes. As he spun away from me half-blinded, I leapt at him. He was trying to bring the gun round on me. I brought my heel down hard on his hand. And the gun skittered away, out of reach under the wardrobe. Then his left hand chopped me hard across the throat. Through a choking haze, I reached the bed, clawed open my valise, swung my revolver towards him as he came toward me. Then I fired. I knew I'd hit him. But even so, he was able to wrench the gun from my hands, race for the door, and slam it shut behind him. By the time I got to my feet, had the door open. Ferdy had a good lead. I took the stairs as fast as I could, but down in the parlor I saw only Bingle, open mouth and a blur of excited faces. Through the blackout curtains at the front door were half ajar, and Ferdy Schatz was gone.
As you know, Colonel, 3 days later, Ferdy Schatz was dead.
Captain Harper, I suppose for you chaps in MI5, this is run-of-the-mill. But for me, the whole thing has been a nightmare. A tragedy of errors. Killing one's best friend is, well, not too pleasant.
As I quite understand, Colonel.
In time of war, friendships are set aside when one's country is being attacked. And I thought Ferdy Schatz was doing just that. Now that I know he was working for MI5... Well, I...
Didn't he tell you that military intelligence had sent him up to Mandrake?
Yes.
Didn't he show you his credentials?
He did. But at that time, I felt sure they were forged.
Oh, I see.
Look, Captain Harper. On the beach at Dunkirk, I capture this man. Later, I am told by General Ballister that he has escaped the POW camp. And still later, I find him in my room holding me at the point of a gun.
And what did he tell you he was doing there?
He said he'd come to Mandrake because an enemy agent was supposedly in the area. He wanted my help in turning up something. Well, it's all easy enough to understand now, but don't you see, Captain Harper? At the time, I thought I was doing my duty. I had no way of knowing for sure that he was a British agent. The whole thing has been a frightful tragedy.
Oh, yes, it is tragic. Perhaps most of all because those shots got to one of our men before he died. He never knew he'd found the evidence he wanted.
I don't understand, Captain Harper.
Colonel, you were able only to fire once.
That's correct. Before he grabbed my gun and ran.
Yes, and lost himself in the blackout.
That's right. I never saw him again.
Or couldn't find him. Is this your gun?
It could be.
I rather imagine it is, Colonel. Schatz gave it to us before he died.
Well?
You fired only one shot from your revolver, the shot that killed Ferdy.
Yes. That's true.
And during a regulation ballistics check, we found the remaining five rounds of your revolver held not powder, but rather microfilms, with a complete German code necessary for your activities here at Mandrake. Colonel Baker, you're under military arrest as a Nazi agent and for espionage against His Majesty's government. Shall we go?
Under the direction of Norman McDonald, Escape has brought you Affair at Mandrake by Ben Wright, starring John Daner. Featured in the cast were Ben Wright, Richard Peel, Parley Bear, Joseph Kearns, Gary Montgomery, and Lawrence Dobkin. Your announcer, George Walsh. The special music for Escape is composed and conducted by Leith Stevens. Next week.
You are groping your way through the belly of a sunken ship, a fortune in pearls secured to your belt. While above, on the ship that tends you, working the pump that sends air to you, is an adversary whose plans include the taking of your pearls and your life.
So listen next week when Escape brings you John Russell's story, The Adversary. Today, radio station WDNC in Durham, North Carolina, celebrates its 20th birthday and its 20th anniversary as a CBS radio affiliate as well. Happy birthday, station WDNC, and many more happy listening birthdays to all the listeners in the greater Durham region from more than 200 CBS radio affiliates from coast to coast. Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, is heard Friday nights on the CBS Radio Network.
That was an episode of Escape, entitled Affair at Mandrake, broadcast on April 14th, 1954. It's time for me to escape out of here. Bring in Luis, allow him to close the Daniel's Den broadcast doors, and bring down the curtain on another successful evening of MSS Entertainment. Luis, you've got your script. This is your mic. In other words, it's all yours.
Okay, Daniel. Great work as usual. You set them up. Now it's time for me to shut this thing down. And I will be doing that by extending my regrets to you all, ladies and gentlemen, because it's time for us to wrap it up. The MSS Express has reached the end of the line, and now it is my job to conduct each and every one of you safely off the train. But have no fear. We will be back again very soon, and all you need to do is come back and join us. You know where, you know when, and you know how. If there are any questions, comments, complaints, or requests, please address them via email to the MSS Director, Miguel Amaro. He can be found at mikeameli@earthlink.net. That's MIKEAMELI@earthlink.net. We will soon be releasing the key and returning the room to you, the listening audience. Please do with it as you wish, for as long as you wish. Just remember, be nice to one another. Otherwise, there might be a little bit of trouble for you. And I can hear Daniel over there reloading his cartridges and greasing the barrels on that six gun. Because, you know, after all, he is a real-life Texas cowboy. On behalf of myself and the rest of the MSS crew, have a great night, a great weekend, and goodbye.